this old diagonal term, and then we have another one, and we can write in terms two component left-handed, right-handed. I will explain explicitly in, I believe, 20 minutes, 15, why you call them left-handed, right-handed. And then we said that in the case of m equals 0, they decouple. Equation for psi left-handed and psi right-handed decouple. And also what I said, that actually this is irreducible representation of Lorentz group. This is correspond in our notation. This irreducible representation and this right here. This one, and when m equals 0, you can see what is going on. We have two equations. Decoupled equation. This guy act on psi L and we have 0. And another guy E 0 plus. This is sort of different. There are two components. And we have usual sigma matrices here. And this is, I stop here, called Weyl equation. You will see that actually these equations, unlike Dirac equation, they're not symmetric with respect to parity transformation when all coordinates goes to minus spatial coordinates. But they are very important for neutrino and weak interaction. Okay, so this is Weyl equation. Now, one can simplify a little bit notation and define the following. Pauli matrices, fourth now. So this guy is nothing else. We just added sigma 0 is just 1. That's it. And on the other hand, sigma bar mu is again 1 first and minus c. And this bar has nothing to do with bar for psi, which we introduced before. This is just standard notation for psi minus q. So we can, and now in terms of this guy, we can rewrite Weyl equation in quite nice form. Pointy, in this case, we can rewrite this guy is equal to mu. Gamma mu will look like that. They are both diagonal. And remember, gamma 0 is just 0, 1, 1, 0. And the rest, sigma Pauli minus sigma. So this is exactly gamma mu. And then Dirac equation, not Weyl, but Dirac equation, is now, so we have minus m, and now use this stuff I sigma d this is what they mentioned, right? B mu, sigma. And this guy, I, sigma, bar, E, and minus M. And we have psi, left-handed, psi, right-handed, zero, zero. And when M equals zero, we have two wild equations, and we get those two equations. I, sigma, sigma bar, E, psi, F equals zero, then I, sigma bar, sigma, E, psi, R, equals zero. So we will use quite often this sigma, sigma bar, which is nothing else but those convenient notations. Now we can write Lagrangian densities for psi L, psi right. So L, L, Lagrangian density. Psi, dagger, not bar, it's two components now, I, sigma bar, mu, e mu, psi L, and Lagrangian density for right component, psi, dagger, r, I, sigma, mu, e mu, psi, r. You will see. Okay, so this is what we have concerning at this moment for wild fragments.
Excuse me.
Right.
This R and L are just kind of relate to the red, right, and left side somehow.
I will explain maybe in 10, 15 minutes. It will be connected with helicities of those states, projection of spin or momentum. Yeah, so that is good reason to call them like that. We will come soon to that. Okay, now we still not solved your equation for free particle. Okay, so the point is that this is our Dirac equation. What is important? This is partial differential equation, right? So a Dirac equation is linear PDE with constant coefficient. It's very simple in principle from point of view of mathematics. Okay. Then the structure, because constant coefficient, the structure of solutions is psi x. This is one of solution, just structure. Is some four component up depending only on v and plane wave, which we use already for for Klein-Gordon equation. Okay, so this is for sure satisfied, and like because if satisfied also Klein-Gordon, we show phi zero is, this is case I will show just a moment, p squared plus m squared, and this is our old notation pp. So this is case p zero positive. So I concentrate first on solution with positive p zero. So the only unknown now is this four component, people say spinor, Dirac spinor. So it has, of course, four components, right? Two side left, two side right. Okay, so if we substitute this psi x in Dirac equation, we get this matrix equation. Gamma mu P mu minus M U P, and this equals zero, and remember, as I said, P zero is this guy. Okay, so this is system of, this is algebra now, right? This is linear algebra, no derivatives. And certainly it's not difficult to solve. It's easy to check actually the condition that there are no trivial solutions. This is determinant of this metric should be zero, just gives us that P0 is plus minus EP. But we already got the right one. Okay, so it's a convenient first to solve with in the rest frame and then to consider boost to get in any frame. Rest frame, this is of course nothing else but this guy equals zero. Then our equation is very simple. Gamma zero, P zero, U, and this guy depends P zero domain. Zero. Oh, okay. It's better. What should write also? Minus M. Okay. So this guy depends only on P0 in this case. So this is very simple equation. We know this. Right, in this case, P0 is just M, right? In rest frame. Then we have quite a simple equation, not to make mistakes. So this is M. Now this vector common, minus 1, 1, minus 1. So 1, 1 comes from gamma 0, minus 1, q equal 0. And we immediately write answer. This is very simple. And this is answer. psi is arbitrary. Arbitrary two component stimuli. It's easy to check that it satisfies. Now, this is our convention. We want to normalize in such a way that in rest frame we have this factor. You will see that it's convenient. Following text of Pechkin, but in principle you could consider others. Okay, so this is what we have as solution. So you can see that our equation, we started from four component arbitrary. So this our equation fits two, because now we have only 2 degrees of freedom. Arbitrary two-component spin-off. And we could pick up any two linear independent psi. So psi same here for top two and for the bottom two component. So we can take two linearly independent solutions. For example, this guy and another is this one. Okay, we will see that they connected with spin, spin up, spin down, concerning in this case, third axis along Z axis. It's not surprising because in rest frame, we have only rotational group, right? In rest frame, no Lorentz group. And we have 2 degrees of freedom, spin up, spin down, and this guy, sorry, I'm really sorry. Could you a little bit, not so loud. But you could talk, if you but not so loud. Okay, so it's not surprising result. Now, let's consider suppose Lorentz boost along C or third component. Okay, now what first of all we have for our energy and momentum in this case? Of course, because we have boost, we will get non-zero P3, right? And another energy. In this case, energy is just mass. And if we consider infinitesimal boost, we have something like that. What we consider many times, now I need to change the notation. This guy, and that is our old bag. You could just, you should not be confused. We have this and M0. So you see energy and P3 at rest frame vector is M0, and then it becomes EP3. And this is at a very small, right? Then this guy, it's easy to, of course, check is this. You can see that when eta is small, we have small component of P3. Now, for finite, we also know that in this case, for finite, we have exponent, for finite, eta. So what we have? We have this E be 3 equal exponent eta 0, 1, 1, 0. It's not unitary transformation, you know, and this n 0. It's again very easy. Answer is that this is m cos hyperbolic eta and sine hyperbolic eta. And remember that Ex equal E eta is equal cos hyperbolic eta plus sine hyperbolic eta. Okay, so we have this answer, sine hyperbolic in this case. Yeah, by the way, this parameter eta calls repeatedly, and you can see when we repeat another boost, because we have exponent, we just add. If we use another boost with eta 1, then we will get eta plus eta 1, right? So it plays the role of the eta. Okay, so this is concerning EP, and now we can consider how we can get U. We already have, for Dirac spinor, we have representation, those S mu generators. I wrote, so boost for UP. So in this case, what we have is this UP equal, and now we have this element X, 1/2 eta, and we have sigma 3, 0, 0, sigma 3 is minus, and it acts on our spinor. Okay, so this is boost generator we wrote. So it's connected with SO3, right? This guy connected SO3 generator, and it expressed through gamma 0 and gamma 3, and it has block diagonal form we already considered. Okay, so now it's again not difficult to calculate. Use Taylor expansion of this exponent, and then we will get, it's similar to question one in assignment one, plus hyperbolic 1/2 eta, and then we will get 1, 0, 0, 1, and we will get minus, because minus here hyperbolic sine, and this guy appears with this sigma 3 minus sigma 3 matrix, which is our S generator. So by the way, let me write for yours also, of course, it's E eta plus E minus eta half. Sine hyperbolic eta is also simple reaction with Okay, so we have this. And now we can go back by using this formula for high performance cross and sine. We get.
I think we have the advanced part, you know.
Sorry?
We have the square root of m and 6 in there.
Oh, sure, thank you. Yeah, sure. Yeah, and of course, that's so clear. Okay. Now we can rewrite this way. Minus sigma 3 over 2 plus e minus f of 2 1 plus sigma 3 over 2 then we have 0 here just with this. Right, you see it's diagonal. So all the all diagonal elements 0 and then we have e theta over 2 1 plus sigma 3 over 2 plus E minus eta 2 1 minus sigma 4 2. Okay, and it acts on our senior. Then, good idea to rewrite. Now, let us use the formula. E eta over 2 square root of m, you can write as square root E eta m. And now use transformation for this stuff. So we can rewrite this guy as F cos hyperbolic F plus M sine hyperbolic. And this is nothing else but E plus P3. It follows from this. What we got here. And then we have E minus square root M. And then we have and of course hyperbolic m minus m sine hyperbolic eta, and this is equal e minus p. So I derive in detail this stuff, then I will, of course, omit many things again for you in science. Okay, so we now know how those
exponent x that they give us those square roots. This is ish. And then this guy equal, I put sign here, but now I can rewrite better because of this relation, something like that. Equal square root e plus e 3, and now I have 1 minus sigma 3 over 2 plus e minus e 3 1 plus sigma 3 2. This is 0. Oh, okay. I can actually write something better. Then we have this guy, x on psi, and another diagonal, and this blue diagonal gives me square root e plus b 3 now 1 plus sigma 3 over 2 plus e minus b 3, and this is 1 minus sigma 3 over 2. Okay. And it could be written, I will show, in very nice form that so we derive UP, right? So this is long line. Now I will rewrite in one line. UP in our case is this. Square root p sigma square root p sigma bar, which I introduced before today, and this is our psi psi y. Let me derive. Indeed, let's consider how it works, p sigma square root. In our case, this is p 0 minus p 3 sigma 3, because we have just only third component, right? Then this is the square root of diagonal matrix if we substitute sigma 3, we have this e minus p 0 is p 3. I should, of course, write this p 3. Okay, p 3, 0, and 0. Oh, sorry. Square root is 0. E, 3, minus p 3, 0, and here I have p 3 plus 3. Right, and this is exactly what we wrote before. So this is can be written as p 3 minus p 3 and 1 plus sigma 3 half and square root p 3 plus p 3. Okay, those guys, very simple. They are projection operator on states in half and double. 1 plus sigma 3 over 2. It's nothing else but 1, 0, 0, 0. And 1 minus sigma 3 over 2 is 0, 0, 0, 1. So their projection operator, square of these guys equal themselves, right? So they project. So indeed, we can rewrite P sigma exactly in this form, actually, right? And it's easy to check that this can be rewritten in this form with sigma bar. Okay, the point is that this expression, let me consider the here, actually, expression 1 is actually valid for arbitrary P. So we can actually now substitute arbitrary P. Psi is arbitrary two-dimensional spinor for arbitrary P, 0, P. And this guy okay, I will show now that indeed it satisfies Dirac equation for arbitrary P. Just substituting in this equation, it will be quite easy. But there will be an assignment 3 actually question, a kind of the following. How I could treat this square root? In this case, you can see it's easy because diagonal matrix, right? So it was easy. But actually, you can treat in arbitrary case of off-diagonal matrix. So there will be question. And you should, again, reduce the square root to expressions without square root of matrices. You see, in this case, have square root, but this is just numbers and no square root of matrix, so it's quite convenient to work. One can do this more arbitrary, so you will spend some time to solve. There will be some hints in this assignment for you. Okay. Let us check. Okay, so let us check that this guy is so we should substitute. We will use the following identity. Sigma, when we multiply P sigma bar, sigma bar. So let's see what is it. This is this P 0 sigma 0. This is 1 minus sigma, and this is P 0 plus P sigma. Then it's quite easy. We will get P 0 square. Linear term, I will write them plus B zero P sigma minus P zero P sigma they cancel. And then we will get square P sigma P sigma, this is P square. It's easy to check. Cancel P square and this is M square. Okay, so this is quite convenient. It will be used many times. So if I take this matrix multiplied by this one, I roll here, then we will get this answer. It's easy to check the P sigma. P sigma equals exactly P squared. And this is M squared. Now, let us substitute UP. This is what I wrote. Square root P sigma, square root P sigma bar psi into the racket way. This is our Dirac equation, right? This one. So we should check that it satisfies. Okay. What we have is this. Gamma mu, P mu, minus M, UP, equal. So those two square roots. And now just substitute all our gamma matrices. We will get this minus M, of course, two diagonal. And all diagonal come from gamma mu P mu. And it will have the form I just wrote in the very beginning of this class. Right when I just started. This was in coordinate space, but now we're in momentum, so we have this guys. This is sigma bar. Automatically I write vector. This is not vector, this is sigma bar for my lesson. This is four dimensional. Okay, now multiply, and then we have. So just as usual, this line, first element, this line over this, you consider summation, you get minus M square root P sigma plus P sigma square root P sigma bar M psi, this is this element. And then another one is this P sigma bar M minus M. P
far side.
So I use this identity. You see, for example, this guy, P, this guy, gives me this. Then I take square root of this guy times this. This is m squared, n squared of p sigma.
You have p dot sigma bar there.
Okay, just for me
dot sigma there.
Right.
Yes. That sigma,
this guy and minus m p sigma, and then p sigma, it's grads and no n, and just p sigma bar.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
And then the second line you have,
it's grad, but I leave it here. I have this minus m, and this guy, right, it's actually correct, but I need it. This is, but, okay, the next one is simple. Just use this identity and we have then it gives me M P sigma, right? I take the square root of this times square root P sigma bar, use this, I get M squared, square root of M squared gives me M. So this is cancel. And same story here. I will get M. And again, they cancel, and this is zero. Okay, so it's quite convenient for, right? It's easy to remember of this solution. Very easy, right? Just square root of P sigma, then square root of P sigma bar, psi. Remarkable that psi same, always. Otherwise, you will not get solution. Okay, so it's nice here.
So is there a solution for massless or massive?
No, it's massive, right? Massive. We have mass, right?
Yeah.
This is, you see, I substitute here, right?
Oh, yeah.
So this is was substituted in direct equation. So this is real full solution for free Dirac quantum for any system. There is subtlety connected with the use of this square root, and this will be in your side, but it's soluble. Okay, so it's soluble thing in. This is like to consider function of matrices. There is some. I will put some here. Okay, but this is a kind of achievement. We got nice form for the solution. Okay, now let's look at some interesting possible. I will use. I already used process 3. So in the end of this class, I will return you your assignment. And solution is on the web.
Right. What does this mean exactly? Because, for example, for Clayborne, we get the wave equation.
And this is essentially also solution like wave. You have waves, right? Because exponent, this is exactly description of plane wave, right? So you have plane wave, but you have now new degrees of freedom, spin, right?
But from here, it's not very clear that it's plane. Oh, there you have e to the power of. Oh, yeah. This is the, okay. This is the spinner that is multiplied with a wave, which is propagating.
It's usual, right? You have amplitude, which is, and you have phase vector, right? So it's usual. The only difference is this is vector now, because we have four components, right? But in principle, it's usual story for wave equation, right? And it's not surprising because we know that this solution satisfies Klein protocol.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not surprising. But we have much more now. We have additional degrees of freedom. This is the most interesting thing. This is spin degrees of freedom. But also, we have a kind of complex now Klein-Gordon, right? We have this complex psi. And now you know from assignment number two that complex Klein-Gordon describe two particles, right? And one can, because charge of these particles is opposite, we can treat them as particle antiparticle, right? Same story will be here, but in much more sophisticated way. This is quantization. When we will get particle, say electron, if we Dirac, he originally just wanted to derive the equation for electron. Electron, but there will be positive automatically, antiparticle. And each of them, unlike Klein-Gordon, each of them has two additional degrees of freedom, spin up, spin down. And they move like plane wave, like in quantum mechanics, with relativistic dispersion relation. So picture is very clear. It was not so easy to figure out that there is another particle, positron, during Dirac time, because it did not exist. He first suggested that this is proton. And somehow, mass of proton is different from mass of electron because of interaction. So it was mass, actually, in his original equation. But eventually, it took, I believe, 2 years or 1.5, he came and independently, it seems, Oppenheimer to the conclusion that there is another particle which was discovered and it was trial. Pauli, many people disbelieved in this Dirac equation because this is another particle which was not in experiment. People believed only in two particles besides photon, proton and electron. Everything is composed of them. At that time, neutron was not discovered.
1930.
Sorry?
In 1930.
Maybe 29 even. I don't remember exactly. Maybe in late 30s. Okay, there is also something interesting concerning this solution, which we will use. Remark. Okay. So we have this solution. How we got it? We got it from Gauss, right? So we wrote the UP is our Gauss lambda 1/2, right? We explicitly wrote this just upper line. We can see acting on solution with another momentum, momentum equals zero, right?
Press, this is press train.
Oh, U,
B, press.
Or it could be rewritten as this one. U, P is lambda, Lorentz boost acting on P press, right? This we heavily used, right? So in these relations, I use what I know from Boost, right? So from here I have U lambda P press, and this is lambda 1 cup U P press. So you can see we have solution at different momentum. So we start from P rest. Lorentz boost acts on this stuff, Lorentz transformation, including rotational function. And then you could write this guy as action of matrix, external matrix on U at P rest. Generalization of this is this for arbitrary. U lambda P equal lambda 1/2 acting on QP. It's very nice relations. Also, it will be important in the analysis of quantum Dirac theory. That spinor at lambda p, any Lorentz transformation, including rotation, can be gotten from the same from spinor at up by acting the generator. Of course, this generator, in general case, acts on spin indexes. In our case, in very trivial way, because we have only sigma 3. In general case, it could change spin up and spin down, but anyway, structure is the same. This is quite an important relation. Okay. Now let us look at this at the case when P3 goes to infinity, right? So large boost. So power solution, very large boost. So we have QP. And let me take, let me write this first spin up. Okay. This solution. So it will be. So in this case, we have solution we have solution here when this guy is spin up. In this case, only this step survive, right? No this step. only this projection. So same story here. No this step in the case of skin up. So we can write this answer, P minus P3, and I will write 1, 0 explicitly, and then pull over P plus P3, and I have 1, 0. Then P3 goes to infinity large boost. Then P3 is essentially energy, right? So it goes to zero. Let me write answer. 2P. I will not write the speed, it's clear what I mean here. Zero, and this is 1, 0. Because this guy goes to zero in this limit, P3 and E essentially same, up to mass, and this guy goes to square root of E. But this is only right component, right? So in this limit, very strong limit, very large boost, we get very nice answer that Dirac Spinor becomes Y. Dirac fermion becomes right handed Y. Now it's called right-handed because you see in this case spin is directed along P3. Right? So it's called helicity in this case. So for right-handed fermions, we have situation when spin is along momentum. Now you is spin down. Then in this case, opposite happens. We have this guy doesn't work, right? We have only this term and this term. So we have in this case this P plus P3, 1, 0, 1. This is spin down, so 0, 1. Lower gives me E minus. And this comes to left hand. Left boost. This is left-handed with spin directed opposite to momentum. So you can now this was your question answer is that this very good actually names, right? Right-handed guy with spin along momentum, and this guy left-handed with spin opposite to momentum. Let me describe this a little bit in more formal way. So it's massless limit. We ignore mass, right? Because when momentum is very large, we can, in zero approximation, consider them like massless. Introduce helicity operator. And its definition varies actually simple.
Is that guess?
Yeah, I will write immediately what it means. So S, this is named for four by four metric sigma c. So this is our right. Okay, this is, I should put one half here. Sorry. It's connected. We will show this explicitly that in the case of Dirac theory, spin is one half. So like in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, we have one half. Okay, so this is, and by the way, this guy is quite simple. This normalized momentum. Okay, this normalized momentum is that. So it's easy to check that eigenvalues. R A plus minus one. And now we say A plus one half is called right-handed. Say H is called left-handed. Now, in the case of massless particles, it's Lorentz invariant quantity. Point is that this answer, plus one half or minus one half, is valid in any Lorentz frame. In the case of massive particles, it's different story. Let's consider massive particles. Of course, it moves with velocity less than c. Then we could go to the frame in which it will go down, back, right? But spin, this is boost to another frame, spin does not change under this boost, this projection. Let me, why do you think it's, we cannot get changing spin under boost? So we have spin along, say, z, x, and then boost along same axis.
Because spin is not a special.
It's not what is special? What do you mean special?
It doesn't depend on the space for you. It's kind of
no. It depends. You see, under rotation, spin rotates. Spin states rotates. No. In this case, point is the following. Look at the boost. Formal answer. Then I give physical. For example, this axis is along third direction. This is boost. This guy, if it looks up, under boost it still looks up because sigma 3 is diagonal. It does not mix spin up and spin down. But in the case, if I have state not we spin along this boost direction, we will get transformation. Another explanation, physical. Spin has the same transformation property like angular momentum. It's inner angular momentum. You know this from non-relativistic quantum mechanics. What is that component momentum? It looks like this. X1, P2, minus X2, P1. Now, under boost, neither X1 boost along third direction doesn't change. Under that boost, you change only mixed energy and V3 and X3 with time. So it does not change. So this is important, that when we have mass, we could change the direction by boost of momentum, but not spin. And then we change helicity. So helicity is not Lorentz invariant quantity in the case of massive particles, right? Helicity is not Lorentz invariant quantity for massive particles. This is, I explain why. But it is Lorentz invariant for massless one. And now you understand, because of this limit, I consider how naturally two components. A spinner appears for massless, right? Because you kill two or four components in the boost, right? So we automatically get Wang fermions. Still recently, people believe that it's quite probable that neutrino we observe in lab are massless, exactly. Actually, they are left-handed. They interact like left-handed, this electron neutrino. Now we know that for sure they have masses, but very small. We still not established exactly the form of masses for them, but they have masses, but very, very tiny. So description of those guys, they are so small masses that just in the case of not so big energy, like decay of neutron, this is famous beta decay. And where actually neutrino was discovered, this is decay neutrino, proton, electron, and sorry, neutron decays for proton, electron, and anti-neutrino. Mass is so tiny that even this energy is huge, and we still could use, like I showed, two component description. So it's left-handed. So if you look at a standard model electroweak interactions, this W, W boson, they interact with left-hand neutrino, and you introduce this explicit. Okay. But now we know that they're not masters, and it was a huge discovery, and Canada participated heavily in this discovery. This is no experiment, right? Chris knows he's from Sudbury, from that city where there is mines and this snow Sudbury neutrino observatory. First step was done in Japan, but this is certainly Nobel Prize.
When it happened? When
it happened around, I believe, 10 years ago, maybe 7, 8, something like that, quite recently. Maybe 9, something like that. Okay, so this is concerning the stuff. Let me look what I have now. So this is the stuff. Okay, maybe I give you now, I return. I do not know your names. You are part of it, right? Now I know your name. Okay. You should help me. Many people not here today. I know I got him a message. Shoulik Sur. No, right? Yilian. No. Then this guy is not here. This is yours. Then this is yours. Alan Baton, I believe he's in McMaster, they did not come. And Balasu Brahmanian. Ah, McMaster, so McMaster. Yeah, I know. Sorry, that toy is Simon. Jeff Ngida. Oh, this is you. So it was 6 to 9. Jerry Young, this is you. And from McMaster, local, but the people from Philip Ashby, Kabiri.
I just emailed the third question you got.
Yeah, in 1 week. Okay.
You know exactly that. When I got this, I just emailed you.
Oh, yes. So everything was included.
Okay.
No, I saw that you asked about assignment number 3. Assignment number 3 you will get in 1 week. So it will be posted in 1 week. Solution already, I believe, posted on this number 1.
I have a question about the norm of the use of the square root of m. So
I actually should discuss right now. It's why we pick up. Point is, okay, I answer this good question. Why we put this guy here? If we did not put, it means we divided by square root of m, right? From this. Our limit would be singular. L would be square root of m would be here in denominator. And then massless limit would be singular in this case. So we put this guy here in order to get a smooth limit for massless limit. If we consider normalization without square root of m, our answer would be divided by square root of m, divided. And then we would get into it when m goes to 0.
And what will be the square, the u square?
Normalization.
Yeah.
I will discuss right now. This is answer, but I will discuss normalization exactly right now. Okay, we can maybe spend at least 10 minutes. We started with it, right? Okay, normalization. Okay. Of course, we could consider normalization. This is nothing else but say U A complex conjugate U A is not Lorentz invariant. This is like Psi Dagger Psi. Let's. It's quite easy. You and we have our wonderful solution one, right? So we work just with this stuff. So this, let's calculate. This equals sine dagger d sigma sine dagger sigma r. Multiply, okay, this is, so this guy is row and this is column. So dagger means that we have complex conjugation but also transposition, right? So this guy is this, the root. P sigma. Sine and P sigma bar sine. Okay, now let's consider this and we have this answer. Square root P sigma square root P sigma, just P sigma. So what we have is this. P sigma sine plus, and now sine dagger, and this is P sigma bar. But we know what it is. This equals sine dagger, and this P zero first term minus P sigma sine plus sine dagger P zero plus P sigma. Those cancel, and we get two E P. This is a general case, so I wrote. So you can see this guy is certainly. Not Lorentz invariant, we get energy. Usually, we take those three. We can pick up any two-dimensional psi. Normalization for them will be usual. Just one. This guy. Okay, so it's not Lorentz invariant. Then take u bar u. You remember psi bar psi we proved is Lorentz invariant, but we will show what is going on in this case. U bar. So just we have very similar stuff, but now we have gamma zero between them. Gamma zero is simple. Gamma zero, let me use this in mind. Okay, so in this case, it's quite easy. So we have this equal again, psi. You can check. Now this P sigma P sigma psi plus. But those guys give n, we already know, right? Because sigma bar times p sigma is m squared, I showed before. Right there. P sigma times p sigma bar is m squared. So this is 2m. And this is good. This coefficient, usually we take this 1. The standard, there are two standard choices for those books. First choice, this is what we consider many times. This is guy spin along third axis one half, and another 1 0 0 1. So spin up, spin down along z axis. And second choice, helicity states. So when we have non-zero momentum, helicity states. In this case, we have h plus 1 half or h minus 1 half. Okay, how they act in this case? We have this S, 1, 2, and say P, this helicity operator, 1 half, right? Gives, acting on, say, psi 1, gives 1 half. This will be right handed. And 1 half P S acting on psi 2 gives me minus 1 half psi 2. So in this case, in many, many cases, this helicity state is extremely useful in calculations. It's much easier to work with them in many cases. In this case, we consider spin along not some fixed axis, but along momentum, which is quite natural. Especially at high energy, it's almost necessary when you could use massless particles, then it's automatically. You could not consider rest frame with spin along z axis for them. So this is extremely popular helicity state. Thousand works done by using this stuff, and people, Nobel Prize level studied this helicity formalism. To simplify just calculations, this Wigner, for example. Quite also known guy, 70 died, unfortunately. Marius Djikov, who worked with Wigner's stuff. Okay, so I believe apparently we could stop at this moment, and then I will discuss as usual afternoon. So, solution for assignment number one. Today you should bring assignment number two, right?
It's very strict. We're very busy with this research stuff.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, I could give you, say, one day or something, send me email.
No,
yes. Right. Okay, let's do this week by Saturday. Okay?
Sure.
If you are not ready today, then by Saturday, this is assignment number three. Yeah. Okay, thank you.